So today, I want to talk about a subject, but I'll start off kind of in a slightly different way, or not starting off with a subject exactly. In a section of scripture that we're very familiar with, this is in 2 Timothy 3, and we'll read 1 through 5. What we see is Paul telling Timothy about perilous times to come. And, as we look over society today, and as we read through these, this is, it starts to become more real to us because we can see a lot of these things unfolding. And here I'll just start in 2 Timothy 3, verse 1. It says, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. This is, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power." I think as we read that list, it can really strike a chord. As I say, when we look at society today, even thinking back 5 years or 10 years, we can see how much society has progressed down this path. But if you stop, or if we stop, and we look not outside, right? Because it's easy to look outside of ourselves and kind of say how bad everyone else is doing. But if we look inward at ourselves, does this list describe you more than what you would want? I know whenever I read this list, it describes me more than I'm proud to admit. It's, if I take stock of my conduct, my actions, my thoughts, I can see too much of that list still in me. Because, as I said, it's easy to read these words and only focus on external, because it is progressing down this path, but that's not really what God wants us to do, right? More and more society is moving in this way, but we can easily get caught up in that same path. Maybe not quite as bad, right? Maybe we're not as much lovers of ourselves. Maybe we have some self-control. Maybe we're not, quite as headstrong as others, but that's not really what God calls us to be, is it? A little less worse than someone else, right? Sin is sin, and that's how we should view this list, that anything within ourselves that is in this list is not godly. It's not the way of God. Because, of course, God, right, is the one who will focus and eventually judge the world, judge society. But he's calling us to judge our own houses, our own selves today by looking at things like that. And what I want to focus on for this message is I want to focus on the antidote to essentially the first trait that Paul calls out here, lovers of themselves, right? And what even as a small child, how easy it is to just become focused on ourselves. And this is what it means, is when we're lovers of ourselves, we love ourselves more than we love others, right? And that, very clearly is not what God calls us to do. And so what I want to do is, as we start to look at this antidote, and it'll become very clear what I'm suggesting the antidote is, I want to read 9 verses. And these 9 verses are a little bit scattered throughout the Bible, but you'll quickly see a theme, probably even within the first one, of where I'm going. So the first one, and you don't need to turn these per se, these are all, very well known, but going through these. So the first one is Deuteronomy 5:16. "Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you." And of course, we see this command is again in Exodus, it's in Matthew multiple times. So it's one that is repeated throughout the Bible. The next one that I want to read, Leviticus 19:32. This is, "You shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear your God. I am the Lord." The next one, 1 Peter 3:7. That's 1 Peter 3:7. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. And then in 1 Timothy 5:3, that's 1 Timothy 5:3, honor widows who are really widows. Are you starting to get the theme that I'm going to talk about today? Another one, 1 Timothy 5:17, let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine. 1 Timothy 6:1, let as many bondservants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and his doctrine may not be blasphemed. We see this as a repeated theme throughout the Bible, honoring others. 1 Thessalonians 4:4, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and in honor. The last two here, Romans 12:10, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another. And then the last one, if it wasn't clear who God intended us to honor, if there was any doubt, 1 Peter 2:17, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. So to summarize these verses, we're supposed to honor our parents. We're supposed to honor the elderly. We're supposed to honor our wives if we're husbands. We're supposed to honor widows, elders who rule well, our masters if we have them, our own bodies, our brethren in the faith, rulers, and all people. Think about that list, especially even discounting the last one. If you're to honor these eight categories mentioned, you're basically being told to honor somebody, honor probably multiple people throughout every day. Without, as I said, leaving aside even honoring all people, honoring just those eight specific categories, how do you go throughout a day without some type of interaction? Maybe not even a direct interaction, even a thought, without, you know, encountering these eight people. And so what I want to look at today is honor, because if you want to know the antidote to not being a lover of yourself, as Paul warned Timothy about, honoring others is a critical aspect. And it's one, as we can see, that God is very clear and clear throughout the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, that we are to honor other people. And here, we'll just start reading the dictionary definition. And this is probably the one that jumps to mind. So here from the Oxford Dictionary, as a noun, it says high respect, esteem, a privilege. And as a verb, it says regard with great respect, fulfill an obligation or keep an agreement. And respect is probably the word most people would think about when they were asked, do you honor somebody else, right? I would imagine, at least for myself, that's the first thing that jumps to my mind is, do you respect someone else? Do you honor that other person? And it's a good definition, but if you look at the underlying Hebrew and Greek words underlying these verses that I read, I think it actually gives us a more clear, concrete way of how do we honor somebody? How do we respect somebody? And there's actually two Hebrew words and one Greek word that is used throughout these verses that I read. So the first Hebrew word is hadar, and that's H1921. And here, hadar means to swell up, literally or figuratively, active or passive, by implication to favor or honor, be high or proud. It says put forth. The other Hebrew word is H3513, and it's kavod. And here it means to be heavy in the bad sense, or in the good sense, to be numerous, to be rich, to be honorable, to make weighty. And you can see where the to be heavy kind of comes in and comes into play, depending on whether it's good or bad. But it goes on, it says, abounding with more grievously affectionate, boasting, be chargeable, to glorify, to be or make glorious, to glorify, to be great. And it goes on, but it's more in that sense, that it's all about to make something weighty, to make something glory, or to glorify something. And the Greek word probably is the most clear. This Greek word is G5091, and it's tamaho, and it says to prize, fix a valuation upon, by implication to revere. And so, you know, if we take those verses that I read and use this lens, what God is commanding us to do is we are to fix a high value on who? We're supposed to fix a high value on our parents, on the elderly, on our wives if we're husbands, on widows, on elders who rule well, on masters if we have them, on our own bodies, our brethren in the faith, rulers in all people. You know, think about this shift. It's not just respect, because respect is part of it. But what God is calling us to do is to fix a high value on all of these different categories of people, right? And ultimately, as he says, to fix it on all people. And how can we be lovers of ourselves if we fix a high value on others? Right? It becomes very hard to become a lover of yourself when you're fixing a high value on it, basically everyone you're interacting with. When you think about somebody, when you talk to that person, when you, you know, when there's an action performed on that person, how can you be a lover of yourself when what you see is something of high value? You know, and how much differently do we treat something that we value highly? Now, think about a child. If a child, you know, wants a new toy and they get that new toy, what do they do? How do they act? They hold it tight. You know, the same child who loses everything, can't find anything, will know exactly where that toy is because they're taking it everywhere. You know, as parents, how many times have you been asked, you know, can I take, you know, their special new toy to some place that's completely inappropriate to take because they want to have it there with them. And you can see how much joy, how much value they place on it. And they treat it very, very differently than they treat everything else. You know, as I say, the same child that loses or walks away from everything that they do will hold tight onto that toy and will make sure it's well protected, that it's taken care of. You know, or even for adults, you know, think about when you get a new car. What do? You kind of make sure you park in such a way that no one's going to ding your doors, right? You take it to the car wash very frequently because you want it nice and clean. You vacuum it more frequently. You treat it in a different way than you treat all your goods. And so if you think about this, if we place high value on other people, how easy is it to produce the fruits of God's Spirit in your interactions with them? Right? Because you value them highly. You want to do good things for them. Right? And this is what God is calling us to do. Right? God is saying that we are to honor all of these different categories throughout our lives, ultimately honoring all people. Even people we don't know, even people we don't necessarily interact with, or even people that we interact with, and those aren't good interactions. Our enemies, right? That's what we're called. We're to value them highly. And if we think about it, this is what God, of course, did from the very beginning. You know, even while we were his enemies, what did he do? His son laid down his life for us. He valued us highly. And so we can take a concept like honoring that might be a little abstract, might be, you know, just something that feels good. But when we look at it, how God is telling us to honor people, I think it becomes very concrete. You know, you basically look at that person you're with, whether you like them or you don't like them, whether something's going well or not going well, and you tell yourself, I'm placing value on that person. I'm placing a high value, not just a low value, but I'm placing a high value on that person. And how much would that change how you think about that person? You know, as I'm sure everyone sees, you read so much about how people are interacting today, right? And most of it is not very positive. Now, there's, you know, of course, some bias towards focusing on negative things, but still, it can be hard to find positive interactions. And there can be lots of frustrating cases. But, you know, imagine I was reading an article where, you know, someone was, I think it was at a McDonald's or some fast food restaurant, and one of the patrons was yelling at the staff because they, you know, didn't make their hamburger right or something like that. How can you do that if you're placing a high value on that other person? You know, we all make mistakes. I'm sure that person who was yelling had made a mistake. Probably even that day, right? I'm sure if they were in the same situation and were having to make lots of things throughout the day, they would want, right? They would want a lot of grace. They would want somebody where they had messed something up not to get angry at them. Why are you getting angry at me? But in the reverse situation, they didn't place high value on that other person. What did they do? They just saw them as somebody that should do exactly what they want. That's not honoring them. Right? And so you can see just by this notion of placing high value on someone else, it can completely transform how we interact with them, how we think about them. Because, you know, going back to the fruits of God's Spirit, if you place high value on someone, it's not really going out of your way to love them, is it? To be joyous around them, to be peaceable, to be long-suffering. Right? If you place high value on something, you know, imagine I'll go back to the car. You know, lots of people like expensive cars, but a lot of expensive cars are very hard to maintain, right? They, you know, BMWs, Jaguars, a lot of them have a reputation for not being very reliable, but people are pretty long suffering with their very expensive cars. Why? Because they value them. Right? They place a high value. And so, you know, if something doesn't work right, that's okay because I love this car, right? That you can see people who do that. But do we do that same thing with other people? You know, to be kind, to be good, to be faithful, to control yourself around those people. If you place high value, you can see how much easier it is to produce the fruits of God's spirits in your interaction with those people. It will be the way you want to be. You know, not only is it easier, that's what you're going to want to do because you place such high value. It's like that child who's protecting their new toy, right? They're going to protect it. They're going to do everything they can to make sure that stays this shiny new toy. And this is what God is calling us to do, because when we place high value on somebody, it's something we want to do. We want to make sure they're cared for. We want to make sure they're happy. We want to make sure good things happen to them, right? And this is exactly what God does to each and every one of us, right? He honors us. He places high value on us. And especially, you know, thinking about meekness specifically, how easy is it for us to honor, or if we're honoring somebody else, how easy is it to show meekness to them? It's almost the definition of meekness, right? That you place high value on other people. You know, think about how Jesus in Matthew 11, verse 29 links meekness and lowliness of heart, right? Christ says those two things are very intertwined, and it makes sense. Because if you're lowly of heart compared to somebody else, compared to God, what are you doing? You're honoring. You're lifting them up. You're putting a high value, high price on them, so that when you know, think about that other person, you're not saying, I am more valuable than that other person, right? That's not what we're called to do. What we're seeing here is with honor, we're saying, no, that person has great value compared to myself, and then I'm going to be meek towards them, right? It's a very clear linkage between those, because God wants us, you know, it's not that God wants us to think lowly of ourselves per se. What God wants us to do is he wants us to think about ourselves in the right relation from a value perspective with him and with other people, right? That's what he's calling us to do. And of course, I'm here tying honor to the fruits of the Spirit, because when you produce the fruits of God, what are you doing? You're thinking and you're acting like God. And as I said, God showed honor to us before we ever showed honor to him. And that's what he expects us to do. In those commands, in the 9 verses that I read, he's expecting us to show honor to those other people. If you notice, in every one of those verses, it didn't give a caveat. It didn't say, honor the elderly if they're honorable. It didn't say, honor, you know, your father and mother if you want to. It didn't give caveats. It said, honor those people because that's what God commands, almost irrespective of how they behave. Now, honor, you know, you can get into some situations there, and honor is not, you know, doing whatever the other person wants, right? So that's not what we're saying. And it's similar to meekness. Meekness is not just, you know, being someone that stepped all over. That's not what God is saying here. But when you affix a high value on somebody else, you put them in the right relationship between you and your value that you place on yourself and the value that you place on God. You know, honoring others is one of those essential ways that God commands us to think about others, because as I said, that's how God thinks about others. Here in Matthew, and I'll read Matthew 10, 29, verse 31, what does it say? It says, are not 2 sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will? But the very hairs on your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Right? This is what God is saying in these scriptures. Right? If you think about honoring being, you hold someone of high value, or you hold high value of that person, this is what God, or this is what Christ is saying. He's saying the Father holds you in high value, or holds a high value against you, which is essentially honoring you. This is, you know, what Christ is saying, is that God the Father values you so much that he knows every mundane thing about you. You know, I mean, how important is it to know how many hairs are on your head? You know, it's not that God is just a master of, I just want to know every random fact. No, what this is showing is, this is showing that he cares so much about you. Just like that little child cares so much about the toy, he cares so much about you that he even knows things like how many hairs, which, yes, I have 0, so I make it easy for him. But God knows every. That was a little slow, John. Took a little while. But he knows every little thing. It's not saying that's all he knows about you. It's saying he knows everything about you, including these mundane things. And that's not even where he focuses most of his time. But he values you so much that he knows everything about you, no matter how small, how much, how simple, how, you know, insignificant it might seem to you. God places so much value on you that he knows everything about you. And if you think about this, you know, God the Father, the most powerful being in creation, right? The one who created all things. You know, we're not talking about just some king who has, you know, a small kingdom, or someone who has a lot of gold or a lot of money, right? We're talking God the Father knows this about you, values you so much. You know, the God the Father that could do all things, he could create another one of you. But he doesn't. He chooses to value each and every one of us individually. He can do anything. He can have anything. But what does he value? He values each and every one of us, each and every person who's ever lived. He values so much that he knows everything from the number of hairs on their head and everything else that goes up and becomes more important. You know, think about that, is that the number of hairs on your head is the baseline. That's the least important thing that he knows about you. And what he's saying is everything that's more important than that, he knows, he cares, he values. And that's the value that we are to affix on other people, right? Now, probably not wise to go around and try to count everyone's hair. So, you know, after services, we don't want to see that. But what this is saying is God cares so much. He values you so much that he knows everything about you. And then what does he do? He puts your needs at the level where he makes sure they're taken care of. Right? It's not just enough to know somebody, know things about them. But no, God goes beyond and he knows everything about you because he wants to know everything that you need. He wants to know everything that you want because he's giving those things to you. He's fulfilling all of your needs. You know, and especially as we start to, you know, we're coming closer to the Passover season, right? This is the ultimate test of where they put value, right? God so much valued you that even when you hated him, even when you were sinning against him, he sacrificed his son so that you could live for all eternity. That's the value that he puts on each and every one of us. And we, in turn, should do that by laying down our lives, you know, every minute, every day, every hour, in service to others, in helping others, in valuing others, and understanding what they need and showing honor to them. But where was honor, godly honor, start? Because, you know, godly honor isn't something that you just naturally have. You know, it's not something that just comes naturally to each and every one of us. But there's a very important chain that we have to build up to have godly honor. I want to start looking at this in Deuteronomy 10, verse 12, because there's this important step that we have to have. So this is Deuteronomy 10, verse 12. And I'll read just a couple of verses here. And this is, again, very well known. It says, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you?" Right? So this is the basis of what God requires of you. "But to fear the Lord your God and to walk in all of his ways and to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your heart and with all of your soul, and to keep the commandments of God and his statutes, which I command you today for your good." Right? He doesn't tell us to keep his commandments for his good. They're for our good. And then dropping down to verse 20, it says, "A second time, you shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and you shall hold fast and take oaths in his name." And it goes on, "He is your praise and he is your God, right? Who has done for you these great and awesome things which your eyes have seen." You know, what God is saying is he first did things that were so great, so awesome, that you should fear him. And here the fear is, you know, essentially you should have the proper reverence for him. You know, there's a little bit of you should be afraid of God, which is true, right? What can God do? God can instantly come down and destroy any one of us, and he can for cause. You know, it's not that he does it arbitrarily without cause. He has cause to destroy any one of us at any time. And so we should have, you know, not just reverence, which is very important, but we should be a little bit afraid of God. Now, we know God is loving. We know he's not arbitrary. We know what he wants for us long term. But we shouldn't let those facts, you know, reduce the fear of what God can do. Because God is the Almighty God. He can do anything. He can do everything. And we should hold him in that proper fear. Or we should hold him, yeah, in that proper fear. So you might be asking, how do you get from fear to honoring? Well, Proverbs tells us fairly straightforward how that happens. And I'll read out of the NIV. This is Proverbs 22, verse 4. It says, "Humility is the fear of the Lord. Its wages are riches and honor and life." Think about what the proverb is saying. It's saying, if you want to fear God, you have to be humble. And what does humility mean? Right, because what this is saying in the book of Proverbs is that the only way that we can fear God is that if properly, the godly way, is if it comes from a place of humility. We have to be humble in relation to God. And as I say, what is humility? The dictionary definition of it is it's a modest or low view of one's own importance or humbleness. And kind of the working definition that I always think in my head is that humility is about understanding your place relative to God, to man, and the rest of God's creation when it comes to value. Because where is God's value? You know, way up here, infinite. There's no end to the value of God. Where's our value compared to God? Very low down. You know, infinite, almost infinitesimal, right? Now, God places a high value on us, but it's still, compared to His, very low. And so what does that mean in our value compared to other people? You know, we can affix a dollar value. Let's say that Leah is worth $1 million. LG? I don't know. How do you think, Leah? 1,000? I don't know. That was probably not nice. No, LG is worth way more. Maybe 999,999. But what is that relative to God? Is that a big, even if Leah was worth $1 million and LG was worth $1, what's that when you think about that in relation to God? Almost the same. Because God's value is so much higher. And so even if there was some relative value between people, it doesn't matter. Because relative to God, we're all the same. Our value is all within the same range. And that's what humility helps us understand, is that even if I put in human logic that somebody is worth more than someone else, which isn't how God thinks, even if we put in that human logic, God is saying, yeah, but you do that relative to me, and the differences become non-factors, right? Just not an issue, not something that we should be thinking about. And so when we think about humility and we think about it in as this value equation of us compared to God, compared to other people, compared to God's creation, we can now put everything in proper regard, because when we properly fear and respect and honor God, by doing that, we understand His high value, and we understand the high value He puts on each and every one of us, and that it's all the same value, that there's no real difference, that any difference is insignificant. And so when you think about this, you have the fear of God, which is produced by humility. Humility tells you your value relative to other people, right? But first you understand your value that God places on you, which is a high value. It says God honors you. He knows everything about you. And if your value is very high and everyone else's value is very high, you start to understand why you can honor everyone else. Because you know your relationship with God. You know God is way up here. You know God honors and values you very much, and you know that you can now go and honor everyone else because they have that same high fixed value. And if that chain is unbroken, then it's very easy to go honor other people. But what happens if that chain, you know, doesn't happen in that way? What happens if we place a high value on other people relative to God? Right? This is what Jesus warned us about in Luke 14:26. It says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and his mother, his wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And what is this basically saying? He's saying you have to understand that the value of God is so much higher than all of these other people, even yourself, that God is up here and everyone else is down here. You have to understand that first, which is the fear, the respect, the honor of God. Now, what happens if we don't place high value on ourselves? Right? Because God, you know, nowhere does God say we're not to affix a high value on ourselves. Right? Of course, this is what Jesus was talking about, and I read earlier in Matthew 10:31. It says, do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Or we have to understand, especially in relationship with the rest of God's creation, the value that he puts on us. God is saying mankind is up here and the sparrows are down here. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't value the sparrows. It doesn't mean we can go do whatever we want with God's creation. But what it is saying is that you are a very high value, and the value that God has affixed on you as an individual and all of mankind is much higher than the value he puts on the rest of creation. And think about that. That then starts to put you on a different plane. It starts to say that you have to think about yourself as high value. Because if we don't, what will we start to do? We won't value other people high enough. So we can't underestimate the value that God puts on us. Now, what happens in this chain? Even if we fear God, even if we value him highly, we value ourselves highly, what happens if we don't value others highly? This is how we become lovers of ourselves, right? That Paul warns society of. So it's all in a proper balance. So we have to understand what our place is relative to God, relative to the rest of creation, and relative to all of humanity. And humility helps this flow stay in proper order, proper balance. It's the basis of honoring others, is that you have to do it through humility, just like you have to fear God through humility. Now, honor is really a simple thing. You know, it's as I said earlier, it's a word that we might not use a lot. It's a word that might not come natural. It might be a word that we, you know, especially in today's society, almost is one of those ancient biblical words that aren't important anymore. But honor, as we've seen, is really a very simple thing. It's basically you see somebody, you think about somebody, and before you act, before I act, before I think about them, what I do is I say, that person has high value, has the same high value that I have. And then when that comes to your mind, it then changes how you act, how you think about that person, how you act towards that person. But we know this very much goes against human nature, right? It's easy to fix either too high a value or too low a value on yourself. It's easy to fix, you know, a value out of whack with God. But here, from just a very simple perspective, it's just about valuing others in the right relationship to yourself and to God. But even if we can overcome that, even if we can begin to honor other people, there's a second part of our human nature that starts to come into play and makes it very hard to show godly value or godly honor over the long term. I want to read a short story from Aesop's Fables to just show this. I don't know how many people have heard The Fox and the Lion, but it's, you know, one of those Aesop fables that very popular, especially for younger kids, because it gives a very clear perspective on a simple but important concept. It says, The Fox and the Lion. When first the fox saw the lion, he was terribly afraid, right? What's a lion? Very big, very loud. What's a fox? You know, pretty small, comparatively. And it says, and ran away and hid himself in the woods. Next time, however, he came near the king of beasts, he stopped at a safe distance and watched him pass by. The third time they came near one another, the fox did what? He went straight up to the lion and passed the time of day with him, asking him how his family was and when he should have the pleasure of seeing him again. And then, turning his tail, he parted from the lion without much ceremony. And what's the concept here? It's familiarity breeds contempt. Right? It's that the more familiar you become with something, you value it less and less and less. Right, Jesus himself experienced this, right? And again, you don't have to turn here, but in Matthew 13, 53 through 58, what does it talk about? It says Jesus had finished these parables, he departed, he'd already done all kinds of great things, and then what did he do? He came into his own country. So these were people that, what? Knew him when he was a little child. you know, had seen him grow up. And what it comes in and says, he taught them in the synagogue and they were astonished. But what were they astonished? They weren't astonished by the teaching. They said, where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son? Right? They weren't astonished by the great things he'd done. They were astonished that, oh, here is this kid that we, or, you know, here's this man that we knew as a little child, and now he's doing all of these things. Like, we remember him when he was, you know, running around playing. We remember him when he was crying as a small child. We remember him in all of this, you know, way of, or all of these things where he was maybe not as glorious and mighty and powerful when he was younger, right? And so what did they go on and they say, is not his mother called Mary and his brothers James, Simeon, and Judas, and his sisters, are they not all with us? Where did this man get all of these things? And so they were offended at him. So instead of being afraid of him, instead of honoring him, they were offended at what he had been doing. He had been doing these mighty works, and they grew offended at him. And it goes on and says, but Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and his own house. Now he did not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief. And that's one of the ugly sides of human nature, that the longer we're around somebody, the longer we have something, the less we value it. Right, because what happens with that little child and that shiny new toy? After a week, after a month, after a year, you know, it's probably stuck somewhere in the closet, if not broken, because it's no longer valued. It's no longer new. It's no longer shiny. You know, what happens to that car after you've had it a year? You know, it starts to get messy. You start to not care so much about it. You don't take it to the car wash as much. You don't vacuum it as often. And this is, you know, essentially what this Aesop's fable and the example of Jesus in his own hometown is telling us, that we, the longer we're around something, the longer we're around somebody, we start to value it less and less. And we see many examples of this with us, right? We see people that treat their wives, their husbands, their children, their parents worse than they treat strangers. You know, somebody that they're just seeing, just meeting, and they treat them better than they treat somebody who's been with them for years, right? Or friends. We can easily, you know, start to treat our friends not the same way as we did when we first became friends with them. Right, or even if you think about it in politics, you know, we vote on president every 4 years. You know, often if they stay 8 years, what happens? Even great presidents, what do people start to do? They start to complain. You know, 8 years before, they thought that person was going to change the nation, change the world. And just 8 years later, not eternity, but 8 years later, they start to see all their flaws. They start to talk about how bad they were, what they didn't accomplish. And that's human nature, right? And it's also in the church. James warns against this. It says, do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. You know, why would we grumble against those that are with us? Why would we grumble against our spiritual brothers and sisters? Because that's human nature, right? We start to value them less and less. What was once exciting, what was once a new calling, now just becomes life. And life is not necessarily as exciting. It's not necessarily as valuable because of why? Not because that thing actually reduced value. No, we started to value it less. Like, we were the ones that dropped in value. And unfortunately, it happens time and time again, you know, that when we're, you know, with somebody or with a group over time, we just value it. But where does that really come from? Yes, it's human nature, but whose nature did it first show up in? Satan's. Think about Satan. He was covering the very throne of God. What would you think if God came to you and said, I want you to sit there right by my throne? What would you think? What would you give to be able to do that? That was Satan's place. He was around God all the time. He saw how God worked. He saw the nature of God. And yet, what happened over time? He began to place less and less and less value on God. Now, God was the one who created him for that specific purpose. You know, could you imagine if somebody came to you and said, God created you for the specific purpose of being with him basically all the time? That you were going to be right there in his very throne room. You were going to be as close could be. How highly would you value that the first day, the first year, the first millennium? But at some point, Satan stopped valuing it. He stopped valuing the Almighty God, the God who could do anything, could create anything. He stopped valuing that God. And then he started to do what? He started to place higher value on himself than God. Satan began to think that his personal value was higher than the value he placed on God. He thought his personal value was higher than the value God placed on him. Now, think how much value God placed on Satan when he was there in the throne room. God made him this perfect being. He placed enormous value on him. But even that enormous value was not enough for Satan. He wanted more and more and more so that he was then equal in value to God. And so when we think about the godly form of honor, it's not just about placing honor on somebody once. It's not just about placing honor on that person for a period of time. It's placing honor for all eternity, because that's what God wants. He wants us for all eternity to place value on him, on Jesus Christ, the value that they deserve, the value that they've shown. And he wants us to place value on all of mankind. We're going to be a family for all eternity. Can there ever be a time where we don't place high value on somebody for all eternity? What is it going to turn into if over time you start to place less and less value? Again, this is all eternity. We're not talking about millions of years. We're talking about eternity. There's no way that we can, in God's family, in God's kingdom, that we can start to place less value on other people. God just can't allow it. Right? This is what happened with Satan, and we saw how that turned out. He can't allow it for all eternity for his family. And he needs to be seeing us doing the right thing today. He needs to see us being able to give honor to all of mankind, to those who we're least familiar with, but maybe even most importantly, those who we're most important or most familiar with. Because particularly if we can honor those closest to us over time, it's a critical piece that God is looking for. He's looking for his children to be able to not just have something shiny new and place honor on it, but to place honor on the things that we have, the things that they've given us, and in particular, the people that they've allowed us to have in our lives. And we can see from God and Christ own example that they place value on each other. They place value on each and every one of us. It's part of their very nature. It's one of the aspects of their nature that is very important because it balances out, it reinforces, it keeps, as I said earlier, it makes it easier to show the fruits of God's Spirit in our interactions with each other. And brethren, honoring others is, as we all know, is not part of our nature, right? And even if we end up building it into our character, it becomes harder to do it year after year after year. But this is what God is calling us to do. God is calling us to honor each other, no matter how familiar, no matter how many years we spent with each other. He's calling us to honor each other, because that's the high value he affixed to us, and he expects us to set that same value on each other. And as I said, ultimately, God is what? He's looking for children who will honor, who will love, who will revere him, yes, but will also do it with all of his children. And so, brethren, as you know, we look at this world around us and how far it's going away from God and his ways, and as we think about what warning Paul gave us, you know, let's think about, let's practice, let's make sure we're pushing forward with the ways of God, which are opposite of that. And one of the key ways that if we're not to love ourselves, it's to honor others, honor everybody in this room, ever honor everybody, you know, in this nation, honor everybody in the world. And that can be an incredibly hard thing to do, but it's something that God expects us to do, to learn, to grow into.